Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, where it's my job to introduce you to people from the world of commercial property. We're talking with investors and thought leaders about their experiences of the commercial property world and sharing our own lessons from the last 20 years to give you practical know-how so that you can follow in their footsteps. If you've ever thought commercial could be your next step, but it just seems too confusing and opaque, then you've come to the right place. There are so many exciting opportunities in this dynamic sector, and I'm looking forward to pulling back the curtain and sharing them with you. Hello, welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Jerry Alexander, and today I'm joined by my good friend, Gary Wilson. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Jerry. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. And thank you for coming along to see us in our makeshift studio here. In fact, helping us make the studio today.
It's absolutely priceless. It's great. It's fantastic, Jerry. I love it.
Right. So, Gary, we're going to talk about project development today. Yep. And I really wanted to bring you on the show because you've got loads and loads of experience in this. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, are moving from resi into commercial. They've probably managed their own developments, whether it's a one-bed flat, two-bed flat, maybe even an HMO. Mm-hmm. They've dealt with the trades.
Yep.
All that lovely stuff, right? And then they're starting to look at larger developments. Mm-hmm. And the question starts coming up of, do I employ a main contractor? Do I employ a project manager? Or, as most people possibly think, I'll continue doing this myself. So we're maybe going to just talk through some of the challenges that people need to think about, right? But before we get into that, shall we introduce you to the audience? Maybe you can give us a bit of your background, Gary.
Yeah, certainly. I'm a 63-year-old project manager.
Yeah.
I've been involved in the construction industry since I was 16, 17 year old. Started off as a joiner and builder. And as soon as I finished my time, I went self-employed. It's been the story of my life. I've always been independent. I've always worked on my own. And I did that for about 20 years, run my own business as a joiner for about 20 years.
Yep.
Then I got an opportunity to come out of the tools, go into sales, and I jumped at that with both arms, and I took that opportunity. And that brought me into a new life, a different life altogether. And I did about 4 or 5 years selling building products to the marketplace, specification market. So that got me into architects, engineers, QSs, main contractors, selling products that Metsec did.
I never knew you did that. I did exactly the same route. I did it for about 3 years, 4 years.
Did you?
Yep. Doing more roofing was my sector that I worked in.
Well, mine was roofing as well.
So was that a deliberate thing? I want to go and learn about sales.
Do you know what? I think the opportunity came along, mm-hmm. and the opportunity was there to get out my jeans and get into a suit and get a car.
Yeah.
And
a phone.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have phones in these days.
Carrier pigeon.
You had pagers and you had to go and find a phone box and put 10 pence in the phone box to phone the office. That's what it was like. But so the sales was a great start. It kind of then got me into design build construction, selling design build construction. And that was a massive learning curve, and that opened up a whole new chapter for me. So coming off the tools, getting into sales, and then getting into constructing bigger buildings, it was a great learning curve. And it got to me where I am today, you know.
So when you went through the sales process or learning about sales, you've then gone back into construction, but at that management level or project management level?
So it was in a sales level, but you have to understand the construction process. Yep. So to sell a construction company or sell a construction service, you have to know what you're selling. And I remember one of my first jobs that I sold in the construction industry was for a company called Buco in Glenrothes. And their director had invited me in. And I remember him saying to me, okay, so how many staff do you have? And at that time, I think we were carrying about maybe 15 staff. And I remember he said to me, 15 staff, that's quite small. You can't be very good. And I remember eyeballing him and saying, we are good. And that was it. That was the first job. It was fantastic. And the buzz, you'll know yourself, the buzz you get when you make a sale, it's absolutely fantastic. It's an adrenaline boost, you know, it's fantastic.
That building's actually not very far. As the crow flies, that building's probably only 3 minutes away from here, isn't it?
So we did we built an extension for them. And it was, it was a great learning curve. So once you sell it, you have to be on site, you have to go on site and meet the guys and understand the process. So that got me into bigger projects and got me into design build construction, which was to be the story of my life for the next 20, 30 years.
So when you're selling there, so I'm just getting into the nuts of this a little bit, mm-hmm. because when you're selling, are you selling a system and an install as well? So you do the extension and then one could say your job's done because you've sold it, but actually are you getting now involved in the construction of it as well?
Through choice.
Yeah.
Through choice. So when you're selling a service, you're selling a construction company, a construction service, you have to understand what the client's problems are. And you have to do a lot of listening.
Yeah.
Everybody has this concept about salespeople being able to talk the hind legs off a donkey. The important thing is to listen and listen to what the client's problems are, and you're there to provide a solution for the client. And then you've got to take it away and you've got to sell that back to the guys at the office. This is what they want and this is why they want it. Let's build up that package and let's take it back and sell it. You're not, you know, you don't have the job yet, you know, so you've got to sell the job.
Yeah. You know? So you... I'm just trying to get to the self-employment bit. Yep. Were you self-employed during this process or did you...
employed.
You employed. Employed. So what was the step, what was the trigger that made you go self-employed?
So I had a break from working for a company. Mm-hmm. I went back to work for myself again. And, you know, I've had a sporting background and I did a four-year stint as a professional coach. Coaching, kickboxing, boxing, boxer size, swimming, weightlifting. I did that for a number of years. It was fantastic, but it's summertime is fantastic, winter time is pretty poor, you know. And the strange thing was your hobby, your passion becomes a job, and you lose the love. Mm. You lose the love for it. So that took me back into the construction industry again. And I got an offer to invest in a project management company. And I thought long and hard about this. It was a massive step to run your own company. And I remember sitting in a car up at St. Andrews trying to justify in my own mind why I should do this. And I was listening to Duncan Bannatyne on the radio. And Duncan Bannatyne said something that's stuck in my mind. They said, Scots inherently will choose more reasons not to do something than to do something.
And good timing.
That's fantastic. That's it. So I made the move, and that got me into a whole new level of construction. I had to be the salesman. Mm-hmm. I had to be the salesman. I had to bring in the business. I had to put the whole package together. I outsourced it all. So it got me into bringing in architects, engineers, QSs, building a team from the bottom up, providing a cost plan for the client. So we were basically, you were taking it from embryonic thought right through to project completion. But you had to win the work first. You had to win the business first.
I'm going to put a quick pin in that. I'm going to come back to that. I want to just drift back a little bit to your sporting side, the parallel life.
Yep.
Just tell us, before you started doing training, what was your career like? How did you get on?
Career in?
Kickboxing.
Kickboxing. It's a strange one. I was involved in jiu-jitsu for a number of years. And kickboxing came about by mistake. We were invited to go to a competition. I'd done jiu-jitsu for a number of years and people that do jiu-jitsu will know what I'm talking about. Before sport jiu-jitsu came along, you're taught how to parry, block, throw somebody, and you think, okay, but what happens if I get a punch? What happens if I get hit? What happens if I get kicked here? And that took me to the boxing. I started doing boxing with Spangles Hunter down at Rosyth, and that taught me distance. It taught me timing, and I put that into my martial art. And boxing became a kind of passion, but I kind of needed something else, and kickboxing came along. And my first fight was in 1984, inexperienced, taught myself, went down, won, had a great feeling, got a great buzz. Mm-hmm. I went down, all the fights were down south. There was nobody up in Scotland doing kickboxing in these days. That's in the 1980s, before it was anything at all. Went back down south the following year, won. Went back down south again that same year, won. And I thought, this is really good. And I was never a fighter. And the strange thing is, you know, your biggest battle is in yourself. Your biggest battle is with you. And in my first fight, the fear I had and the nerves I had and the doubt that I had before I went into the ring was phenomenal. It was a monster, you know. And right up until the latter years when I was fighting professionally and fighting in big fights, it was still the same. It was still the same, you know, you still had that nerve. And I remember Custy Matto, Mike Tyson's trainer, it was a fantastic, fantastic saying. He said, the hero and the coward both have the same feeling, but the hero knows how to channel it, mm-hmm. The coward doesn't. And I thought, wow, that's powerful. And that's what I used to teach to my guys, you know, the nerves and the fear and the shaky legs and the butterflies in the stomach. It's natural. It's as natural as hunger, as natural as thirst. And if you can accept that as a natural feeling, your opponent's feeling exactly the same. So channel it, you know. Probably my biggest lesson in the fight game.
What kind of level did you get to in your fighting?
So I in 1990, I was offered the British title fight. And I fought a young Marine from Norfolk, a guy called Mark Borrett. I fought him in Clydebank. A British title fight, and I won that. And it was my first experience involved in tough fighting. Loved it. I defended that title in the same year against a young fighter from London called Wayne Hearn. And this guy was a very experienced fighter, and he beat me. So I lost my title. I spent maybe the next 4 or 5 years just taking bouts, fighting up and down the country. And I got offered a world title fight in November in 1995. And I fought a guy called, I don't mind his name.
Oh, you were doing so well. I think you're remembering all these names.
I know, but that's part of being punchy, I guess. I fought a guy in Wales. I won the world title, world amateur title. I came back, Andy Reynolds, and
well done.
I came, but that was fantastic. So the next step for me was a defence of that title. Now I'd just not long opened my own kickboxing club at Carnegie Centre. I had a lot of young fighters at Carnegie Centre, and I approached Carnegie's in 1995 and said, look, how would you fancy putting on a world title fight in Dunfermline? With me fighting on it. And they said, well, look, we finish Dunfermline District Council in March 1996. What a way to go out. So why don't we put this on in Carnegie Centre, a world mm-hmm. title fight in Carnegie Centre on the 30th of March 1996. So Dunfermline District Council, along with the World Combat Federation, promoted the show. And I was headlining that show. And when I learned who my opponent was, it was the same guy that beat me in 1990 down in London, Wayne Hearn. And I thought, wow, this is going to be a real challenge. In front of my home crowd, just started this new club. And
a lot on your shoulders.
I looked at my shoulders, and I remember the had a great training team, had a great camp, and week one of the fight, I damaged my knee, and I thought, wow, this is not looking good. So my team had me in the pool with a flotation belt, running in the water, so there's no impact on the legs. You run against the resistance of the water. I've never been fitter in all my life. I was so fit, but mentally, Jerry, mentally, I still wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there. Physically, I was there. And I went to see a hypnotist. And I remember him saying to me, go and tell me something positive about your fight. And I said, I'm not going to get hurt. He says, that's negative. That is negative. He says, what I want you to do is I want you to say to yourself, I want you to keep saying to yourself, I am winning the fight. I am winning the fight. I am the greatest fighter in the world. Nobody can touch me. And he gave me a recording and he said, I want you to listen to them every night before you go to sleep. It was all cassettes in these days, all cassette tapes in these days. And I did that. Now, Wayne Hearn was smaller than me, but he was massive. He was massive. In my mind, he was massive. And I had this massive challenge. And for the first, I had about 6 week training camp. And for the first 2 weeks, it was hard. I couldn't get it. Week three, I was starting to convince myself, you know, I'm going to win this. Week four, I was winning it. Week five, I'd won it. I'd won it. So I couldn't be beaten. And I remember on the night of the fight, my mum had sneaked my kids into the arena. And when I came out second into the ring, when I came out and there was a capacity crowd, the roars were phenomenal. My mum said, I never recognised you because you were so zoned,
yeah.
You know. And I got into the ring and I watched the footage back and I watched my opponent and I was pacing about in the ring and I watched him looking at me every step that I made. He was watching me and I knew he was beaten. He couldn't beat me, you know. And that's the power of the mind. That's the power of the positive mental attitude. I couldn't be beaten, you know.
So?
And I still have that mentality.
And the fight?
And the fight was a unanimous decision. unanimous. And you know, so that was 29 years ago. And the association, I still go down and meet the guy. I met the guy 5 years ago. And we have a great respect for each other. And the association still talks about the fight. It was a phenomenal fight. And I think you need, in any kind of situation, you need somebody that's better than you to bring out the best in you. And that's what he did, you know. Mentally, I couldn't be beaten. Physically, he brought out the best in me, you know. So it made it a fantastic fight. And people still talk about it to this day, you know. And I'm proud of that.
That's great, Gary. I'm really proud of that. I'm glad we went back to cover that.
Yeah.
Small part of your life.
Yeah, it's a small part of the life, yeah.
To talk about mindset and self-belief. Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. So we're going to go back to the project management, and you were saying about the team, building the team, and creating, a support network around you to be able to deliver these projects.
Correct.
So when you go into that project for the client, what is that first project?
The first project for me was 21 flats at Arbroath for a client that's very well known up in Dundee, Bruce Linton, James Keeler Estates. And I remember putting flyers out when I first started. And I remember Bruce phoning me and saying, look, can you come up and see me? I says, yep. And he took me to this old building in Arbroath. Had a basement. It was old employment exchange in Arbroath, an old post office in Arbroath. He took me along to it, and it had planning for 21 flats. And he walked me through it, dark, no lights. And after it, I said, so what do you want me to do? He says, do the lot, everything. I thought, shit. And I thought, wow, okay. So I did the lot, and we tendered it. We got the design team together. We pulled the package together, we tendered it, and this is where I met a young construction team from Arbroath that were kind of in the same vein and same position in life as I was. They were starting out. They won the tender, and we delivered that job. And I know that he made, I think it was 1.3 million before the job started, because they were all sold before we started the work. I didn't make a great deal of money on that job, but I learned so much on that job. And that was my first introduction to doing everything myself, you know. And it goes back to the fight game. It goes back to the training. It goes back to everything. You have to have a plan. You have to have a strategy. You start at A, you end up at Z. And if you don't get your goals set in place, you know, you'll never get there.
I think... You know? There's another skill set in there, Gary, which is being very meticulous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think you can do project management without being very good at the details.
You can't. You can't. But there's one way to learn.
And is that, was that part of your personality, or was it something you forced yourself through?
Something I forced myself to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've learned the hard way in quite a few things, Jerry. And even some of the projects, I've made mistakes. And they've not been costly mistakes, thankfully. But you make mistakes, and that's the way you learn. And that's the way, you know, when I'm talking to young people who are going out for the first time, I think I can give quite a lot. I think I can offer quite a lot in terms of experience, in terms of advice, in terms of direction, because I've been there. I've been there and I've done it, you know.
Gary, when did we first meet? Would that have been?
Hobbeath.
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 How long ago was that then?
That would be
10 years?
Must be about 10 years ago, yeah. I think. Yeah. Okay.
And in that time, there's been a few projects, right?
Yeah.
And there's been one or two headaches.
Yeah.
You know, we've met occasionally and your head is in your hands.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then there's other times things have been going great.
Yeah.
Has it always been a bit of up and down, that sector, that industry? Do you think that's just the way it is? It's just circumstances? What's your thoughts on that?
I think if anybody tells you any different, they're lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listen, anybody that's been a success will tell you this. Construction is not a great game. You know, if it's got to be planned. It has got to be planned properly. But development, construction, things are going to go wrong. Guaranteed, things are going to go wrong. And it's how you deal with these things. So you're up, you're down, you get wins, you get losses.
Yeah.
You know?
Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
Okay, I want to pick through some of the lessons, right? And yeah. I do remember you have been parachuted in to save jobs every now and then.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was now. It's probably about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
There was a project, again, not too far away from here.
Yeah, yeah.
That we were talking about, mm-hmm. and you got parachuted in.
Yep.
There'd been some real issues on that
yep.
on that project.
Yep.
And it hadn't been managed very well.
Yep.
And there had to be some truths and some reality seeded there with
Absolutely.
with the owner and the developer.
Absolutely.
But maybe you just talk through some of the things they were doing wrong.
The biggest lesson that I've learned mm-hmm. that I can take out of that is a job's going to cost what it's going to cost.
Yeah.
So don't try and make it work any cheaper. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And I think that's...
Be truthful.
And...
with yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As the developer, owner.
Absolutely. And when you try and squeeze the contractors down to get to where you want it to be, you're going to have problems. You're going to have issues. And contractors, you know, there's a lot of contractors out there that will take the job and they'll try and screw it and they'll try and come back and get extras. And that creates a problem. That creates the relationship is soured right at the start of the job. And it's not a good environment and it's never going to end up good. You know, you want to have an environment where you've got a contractor on board that's got a fair price, he's going to make a fair profit, and you want to end up at the end of the job the way you started off at the start of the job. That's where you want it to be.
There's got to be some, the theory of that's fantastic, right?
Yep.
So you get three prices back, as you're told, you get the cheapest, you get the middle one,
who
says they can do it, but maybe in 12 weeks, then you get the high expensive one that you think, well, he doesn't want the work, right? Mm-hmm. He's pricing out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have that choice of, do you go for the middle one, do you go for the bottom one? But there must be some other, let's say, containment that you need to put into the conversation that allows you to believe, and the actual outcome is that the middle guy does end up delivering, doesn't end up still trying to screw you anyway, because, you know, you talk about trust and we talk about, right, well, let's take on this contractor, not bring on the cheapest trying to screw us, but what's to say the middle guy's not going to screw you? How do you check that? What sort of things do you make sure, A, that you've kind of, I guess, almost gone through their history to find out they're good for it, but also what kind of checks and balances do you put in place to make sure that relationship does continue harmoniously, they don't take the piss, and the stuff's established?
I guess I was lucky. I was lucky in the early days that I met a contractor. I met a steel contractor that was as honest as the day is long. Mm-hmm. Probably too honest for his own good. That kind of spoiled me a bit. But the one thing I learned from that is that when I had this guy tendering for projects, because he had to win the tender, it was never always the cheapest price. But one thing he did was he said, look, I'm a pricing apples for apples. And the one thing that's really important is that the plan you put together at the start has to be watertight. And this is where you need a power team. This is very important. You need the guys who know the job inside out, who can advise you properly. So when you put a package together, it's not full of holes. If it's full of holes, it's going to leak, and that's when you've got the problems. So you need, experience tells you, you'll learn that if you've got a contractor that's good, stick with them, bring them along with you. And sometimes the benefit of splitting the contract to doing, they get an early works contract, so they start working with you at the outset. They bring value to your project. They bring probably a good cost-effective approach to the project because they've been in the trenches. They know what it's all about. And that pays dividends. It really does. It pays dividends. So I guess the best thing to do is get to know a contractor or get to know a few contractors that you can trust, you know? Now, I've had contractors that I haven't trusted. I've had contractors that have ripped me off, you know? I've had partners that have ripped me off. But you learn through that experience, you know?
So there are some developers, landlords, owners, whatever we want to call them, who will continuously go for that cheaper contractor. Yeah. And that kind of breeds an environment that's maybe not so healthy, but I don't know whether they would say it works for them or not, but it does seem it's pretty adversarial. And the other thing is, once that, especially if you're working in a specific area, once that's known to be the case, it doesn't take long before mud starts to stick.
The reputation's out there. And I've seen this happening. I've seen it happening. You will get a reputation. And you know what? People will tell you have to be ruthless in business. That's a fact. That's a fact. But you still have to be fair in business, you know. You're out to make a profit. Your contractor's out to make a profit. As long as you both understand that, there's a recipe for success. You will get a reputation. If you start screwing people, you'll get a reputation. People won't price for you.
Yeah.
And you'll have to go beyond the geographical area to try and get people to come in. It's going to cost more money. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. And you've got to learn. You have to learn. And the best way to learn is get a mentor. The best way to learn is get somebody that's been here before, somebody that's learned the hard way so they don't make the same mistakes. And my experience from that job we spoke about that's local to here, that was painful.
Yep.
It was absolutely painful. And the pain ended up with me because I had to make it work. And I'm losing sleep. And I'm spending nights on end thinking, how am I going to make this work for my client? And I thought, I'm not doing this again. I'm not doing this again. And I fell out with the developer. I fell out with him. I said, look, I'm not working with you again. This is wrong. And I think the development took a long, long time to sell, you know. So in essence, did he make a profit? I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on from that, mm-hmm. I know that you also, and one of your focuses has always been to do your own developments.
Yep.
And there's been one or two false dawns for you, and you mentioned there about a partnership that didn't quite quite go right. I don't know if you want to explore that a little bit.
Yeah. Do you know what? I thought I knew best in this, Jerry, and I was warned by my wife. I was warned by my father. I shouldn't do this, and I thought I knew better. I was ambitious, Jerry. I was very, very ambitious, and the guy came with a very good pedigree or what I thought was a very good pedigree. He spoke a good game. We sat for long, long nights and explored where we wanted to go and how we wanted to end up. And it started off very, very well. Started off great. And we started to look at our own developments. And there's one that you know about that you looked
great,
at yourself.
Great building, yep.
And we got into that. We bought the building and I started to put all the packages together to project manage it. And I learned the hard way that the business partner that I thought I had, that had my back, everything was 50-50, didn't have my back. And it wasn't 50-50. And there was things going on behind my back that really, really didn't sit well with me. So I had it out with him, sat down with him and said, look, the trust is gone. We're finished. It cost me a lot of money. And I think we had a session up at Kinross when we were talking about our goals. And I said, my goal is to get rid of my debt. That was my goal. I've done that. That debt's gone. But that was a painful, painful experience. So, you know, you really have to look very, very deeply. And if I listen to the people that are close to you, mm-hmm. you know.
Interesting. Yeah. What about the person that's closest, that's in your head? What was that telling you, if you look back?
Do you know what? I thought I knew better. And I gave this person far too much trust, more trust than they deserved. And I should have listened to the people that were around me that cared for me.
Interesting. You know? Yeah. That's interesting. But you, just to dwell on it for a second, you didn't have any sort of second thoughts in your mind at the time. You were like, no, this is good. We're going
for
this.
I had no second thoughts.
No gut feeling there. That's interesting.
No, I had no gut feeling. My gut feeling was to go for it. But I was blinded by ambition, Jerry. Mm-hmm. I was blinded by ambition. And I still am. I'm still very ambitious. Even at 63 years old, I'm still ambitious. You know, and we set out a 10-year plan, the pair of us. We said, look, 10 years, we want to be out, pay off our mortgage and live in the sun someplace. That was our plan. And that sounds fantastic. And it started off fantastic. It started off really well. And I thought, things are going well. And my wife and my father looked at it and thought, things are going well. But we didn't know what was going on in the background.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, you know, you have to delve very deeply into somebody before you give them your trust and before you give them 50% of what you want, you know, look very, yeah. very closely.
I do remember those sessions when we were doing Mastermind in Kinross. And yeah, it was a bit dark for you.
It was good to see.
We're well and truly past that. And you've been doing a few other things since then, a few other projects.
Yeah, I have.
It's probably worth just saying you've also found distractions/other business to run.
Yeah.
Maybe you just touch on that.
Yeah. The alcohol business.
The alcohol business, yeah.
Yeah, so this
another passion.
Another passion, yeah. Funny enough, one of the guys up at the castle said to me, I saw your rum business.
Let's just park the bus for a second. Yeah. Up at the castle. Let's just clarify, you don't currently live in a castle.
This is a
project you're working on, right?
I don't live in a castle. No, I'm
working. We all live in castles up here, Gary. We can tell them that.
I'm working on probably one of the biggest real estate projects in Scotland just now.
Yeah.
Up at Teignmouth Castle. It's a massive project. But the guy, one of the contractors up there, had been doing some research and sort of my rum business and said, you're quite an entrepreneur. I says, yeah, but I'm not a very expensive entrepreneur just now, if that makes sense. But no, we had my kids were both involved in the bar industry. My youngest daughter was involved in the bar industry and her husband. And they wanted to go their own route. They wanted to do their own alcohol. And this was about 7 years ago. We gave them some money, set up the business. And I said, look, what do you want to do? They said, well, rum is the next big thing.
Yep.
People are drinking rum cocktails.
Yep.
And I said, okay. So we did a lot of research. We helped them with the research. We helped them choosing the blends.
I mean, we all know what that means.
I'll take it. The taste nights were fantastic.
And the travel to the source.
Absolutely. So Barbados. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. And if you want to taste rum, real rum, go to Barbados. That is the place to drink it, without a doubt. So they started the business. Grandkids came along. It kind of flatlined and we closed the company. And Sean and I were sitting talking one night and saying, look, this product's far too good to let go. Why don't we pick it up and just do it as a hobby? Mm. And one of my friends who's got his own business in Dunfermline is a rum fan, had his own bottles of rum. He's a rum aficionado. He said, look, I'd love to join. He invested in the company and he brought a whole host of new contacts. And they said to us, your brand is confusing. Get a story, get a strong label, get a strong brand. And that's what we did. And we relaunched the company. It's been good. It's been good, but you know, it's never going to make us a fortune. It's a passion that we've got. We enjoy it. We do it weekends, some nights.
It's a tough industry for sure, because there's some huge businesses in there that want to protect their own. But what's the name of the brand?
Rumborough Oryx. So it's a play on rum in Edinburgh. The story's got a borough in it. If you look at the website, it's a fantastic rum. Yep. It's an aged Caribbean rum. You know, it's a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old blend from the Caribbean, from Barbados. We bring it across over proof at 70%, and we do the last part of the work here. We add Scottish water, pure Scottish water, and it becomes ours. Once you add something to a Bayesian rum, it's no longer Bayesian; it's Scottish. We still have a good client base, and our client base is getting stronger. But we have to make a decision pretty soon: do we sell it? Do we move it on?
Because development, next stage.
Developments are still massive.
Do we go all in again, or
yeah.
So we're at that
okay. kind of precipice just now.
Okay, cool. I thought we'd just detour down there. Yeah, an interesting little project for you.
Yeah.
Available in online and any good stockers?
Yeah, online. It's up in St Andrews. We tend to sell it mostly online. We try Balgove Market in St Andrews, a few of the pubs in Edinburgh, a few of the pubs in Dunfermline. We were approached by one of the supermarkets and we said, no, you're going to take too much of our profit. So we kind of made a stance that this was going to be a premier drink, a premier alcohol, premier rum. So we tend to keep it all to ourselves.
Yeah. So any listeners that place any orders, just say you came from CPI.
Absolutely. There is a discount.
Right?
There's a discount.
There's an exclusive discount for CPI.
100%.
100% discount?
No, 100%. There's a discount.
We'll chat about that later.
What you say.
Right, okay. Teymouth. Let's talk about that quickly then, because that's not long that you've been involved in that project. What is your role there?
I'm the construction development director at Teymouth Castle, and this came about strangely. I was approached by Hardys, and they said, "Look, we'd like you to go up to Teymouth Castle and
local surveying company, yeah,
and help us get the project off the ground." So early stages. So I went up there. I think it was it'd be November 2022.
Yeah,
I was up there. And the project was really just in its early stages. It was starting to move. And they had their own consultants on board. I got up there. The VP of construction that was up there at the time didn't like consultants. That was clear to see. And I think what he saw in me, because I'm not a consultant, was somebody who got their sleeves rolled up and just got stuck in about it. You know, and didn't ask questions, just grabbed it and ran with it. And it was about, I think it was about Christmas 2022 or January 23, the VP grabbed me and said, look, I'm moving on. I'd like you to think about stepping across to work directly with the developer. They'll look after you. They've looked after me. I said, okay, let me think about it. And I went back to them and I said, look, you know, what's the offer? And we discussed a few things. We negotiated a few things and I stepped across. And it's been fantastic. So I've been there for just over a year now. Over a year, maybe 14, 15 months now. And I'll be a year in May I've been with the developer.
What's been built out there so far?
The castle itself.
Yep.
So the castle's been, it's a Class A listed building. And it's been completely converted into luxury apartments. I've got to watch what I see. I can't say too much about it. Signed an NDA.
Sure.
So it's a fantastic model. There are a number of luxury housing zones that are going to be constructed. My responsibility is horizontal construction. So that's ground down.
Yep.
And my main responsibility has been, I mean, Aberfeldy is a backwater, you know. When you go to speak to the likes of SSEN and Scottish Water and you say, I want X, they're saying, what?
Yeah.
You're kidding me on. So that's been a year and a half of hard fighting and not accepting no as an answer. And you know, these guys, these conglomerates, you have to go straight to the top. And I shook things up and I went directly to the top and I escalated things with Scottish Water, I escalated things with SSEN, and I went right to the top and brought them to the table. And we managed to get what we need. We're still not there 100% yet.
So a lot of juiced up connections.
Yeah. So we've got the connections. So we're there or thereabouts. And that's been a mammoth task. So my responsibility is infrastructure, roads, footpaths, all the utilities, all the services, all the drainage. And we had a task just recently where we had to bring a mains cable from across the other side of the River Tay to the castle, and that was a challenge in itself. So we employed a specialist contractor, and I thought, this is going to be a real challenge, it's going to be a real job. You know, I got my teeth stuck into it, and I loved it. So we had to do directional drilling underneath the Tay.
Yeah.
We had to go 10 metres under the Tay and right across the other side, which was 15 metres higher. And that in itself was a real challenge. And I had budgeted 300K for that job. And the cost came in, and it came in at 425K.
Yeah.
So I sat down with the contractor and I said, okay, where is your cost? Why are you so high? He says, it's risk. I said, I'll tell you what, we'll share the risk. So I'll guarantee your maximum cost, 425, if you need it, but I want you to come in at your lowest cost. And it came out 303K, and we got it done for 303K. And I remember sitting, I was sitting at a function in Glasgow, and I got a photograph through of the drill
popping out,
coming
yeah.
through the other side, and it looked like nothing to anybody else, but to me it was massive. It was absolutely massive, you know. It was great.
Was that a local company that did that directional drilling?
They're from Fife.
From Fife, yeah.
From Fife.
I guess that's the technology that's around here, right?
Absolutely. And the thing is, these guys have to design this. It's
a short distance for them.
Is that, yeah. But it was a great job. It was a fantastic job, and a feather in my cap, because it was, you know, we kept it in budget, which was fantastic, you know.
Great. Okay. So over the years, Gary, have you invested in any residential? Done any of your own developments?
Yep. So I've done my own buy to let, but in developments, we spoke briefly about a commercial.
Yeah,
development, and that's still on the go. It's still very much on the go, and this is a site in Dunfermline that has sat on the market for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had approached the sellers and said, "Look, I've done a developer's appraisal, and you know, it proved that the site was worth about 70k." When you do your appraisal.
Yep.
And the good thing from my point of view...
How long ago did we do that? Was that 2 or 3 years ago?
No, it'd be about 2 years ago.
2 years ago,
About
yeah.
2 years
okay,
ago.
Yeah.
And it's not as long as that. No. I don't think it's as long as that.
Anyway.
So they were looking for a lot more than that.
Yep.
And I'd worked with Scottsdale. I was Scottsdale's contracts manager. And we were building 40 starter units for a client up in Dundee. So I had all the costs for doing steel frame buildings.
Yeah.
And I had my costs there, I had my development costs there, I had the site appraisal done, and I sat with the guys and I said, look, here's the costs, here's the figures, and the sales figures, if we get them, 150k a unit, is tight. So the only way we can make this work is I become equity and my equity sweat, and I make this work for you, but you cut me in the deal. And they said, look, we're going to get nothing out of this. So what you're offering us is something. So let's go for it. And I went away and I got some tender costs back, and I looked at Graham and Sybil, the marketing agent. I said, what do you think about sales figures? They said, look, you're tight at 150. So I went back to the guys and said, look, we'll do it, but the time's just not right now. Let's see how the market settles. We need to get sales figures up, and we need to get the construction costs down. So that's sitting part just now. So that's a nice wee development. I've got a development up in Aberfeldy, if you want to discuss that.
Sure.
Talk about it. And this came to me through, you know, pure accident. And this is about being in the right place at the right time and making the right decision at the right time. So I have a good relationship with the contractors up there. And a contractor approached me 3 or 4 months ago and said, I have been approached by a local farmer who wants to sell his land. A motivated seller because he has a father that's ill, he wants to look after him. He said, take it to somebody and see if you can sell it. I said, no, let's look at ourselves.
Do you know anyone?
Let's look at ourselves. And he said, well, look, I'll send you the stuff. So he sent me the site plan or the map. And I looked at it and I thought, wow. I says, this is zoned for housing. He says, yeah. I said, right, okay, so we're in there. So I said, look, let's take this away from the local area. So I introduced them to GWP, who you know, got it right. I took him along and said, look, I want you to meet the architects. I want you to be comfortable. And if you're comfortable, we'll start to talk. We'll start to put some plans together. And we did that. And he came away saying, look, yeah, definitely comfortable. That's great. Went to McGregor McMahon in Dunfermline for the engineering.
Yep.
Exactly the same. Now, I used these guys exclusively when I was doing all the work for FMC in Dunfermline or the industrial stuff.
They're customers.
Yeah, are they?
Yeah.
Are they? Fantastic. So they were a great client of mine back in the day. Fantastic client. And kept me going through the crash because the oil business was booming. So the 2008 crash, they were spending, everybody else was not. So, it really got us through a bad time. So we got the team together and we've master planned the site. 115 units, potentially a GDV of about 25 million. And I'm looking at my construction costs just now. I'm looking at possibly been around 15, you know, but that's, I've not done a complete appraisal yet. We need to get a QS on board. I need them to come on board and do the proper appraisal. But the decision was at the time, do you know of anybody who want to be involved in this? And I thought, yeah, absolutely. I want to be involved in it. So let's get into the deal and then let's see what we can do. Let's have an out if we need an out. And but let's get the deal and let's wrap it up. Stop anybody else getting into it. So we've done that. So the offer's been concluded. It's been accepted and concluded. So we've now got to put the meat on the bones and take it from there. So I guess, you know, I was down south with the guys down south recently.
Yep.
And when I got up and introduced myself, I said to them, I said, look, if I can teach you anything about developments, it's never, ever give up. Keep going. If you've got a dream, if you've got a belief, keep going, keep at it. And the situation will arise where someone comes along and you think, bang, that's it.
Thing is, years of preparation.
Years of preparation. Years of preparation, but also years of disappointment.
Sure, there's
as
luck.
Well.
Sure, there's luck. But there years is luck. Of what? Sorry, disappointment. Did
disappointment
you say?
As well. Yeah. You make your own luck, Jerry. You know, you make your own luck, and you know, I've got one bite to let. Now that's pretty poor in terms of property development. But that came along as I met an agent. I was looking at a flat in Kelty, and I met an agent. She said, "Look," I said, "You're asking far too much." She said, "I know, I've got a house in Dunfermline that." I don't want my family to know about because da 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 da. She said, "You'd like to look at it." I went to see it. It was a probate, 3-bedroom house on the market for about 60 grand. I says, I'll take it. And borrowed some money, put some of my pension into it, and did it up, put it back in the market, worth about 120 grand now. It's renting out all day long. And I thought, that deal came along at the right time, speaking to the right people. This deal came along at the right time, speaking to the right people. But in between that, there's been a lot of scary things and things you look at and think, no, it's not for me, or it didn't work, or somebody else got in before you, and you know, so, yeah.
Okay, just to round off then.
Yep.
This has been fascinating. It's been a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, I've enjoyed it.
It's really been interesting. It. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the therapy.
Yeah,
right?
I enjoyed the therapy.
I just want to touch back on project management, right? Because that's what we initially wanted to talk about, but we've covered lots of other things, which has been absolutely fantastic. For those that are looking at doing development, they are maybe thinking about doing a large CMO or or an HMO development, and they do want to manage their own contractors. Mm-hmm. What are the essentials that they really need to be stepping up on that they maybe didn't do in the houses? Let's just pick an example. If you're doing up a flat, a 1-bedroom flat, you're ripping out the bathroom and the toilet and everything else, and you've got 2 or 3 contractors, and technically you need to give welfare facilities, you need to give all the stuff, right? You need to have method statements, all that stuff. I suspect most people that are doing up a 1-bedroom flat probably haven't gone to that.
No, they haven't.
But when you step to that next level, all of that becomes really serious.
Absolutely.
So without us spending another 2 hours on it, what are some of the key things that you would suggest to people that are seriously thinking about doing that development themselves and just going on from what they've been learning in residential?
Okay, get the right team on board, get the right guys on board, listen to the guys, so that you bring them on because they've got the experience. You know, you can go into it without the experience, but bring people that have got the experience in with you and listen to them. So, for instance, Eastport, for an example, you look at Eastport and you look at a fantastic building and you think about it, and the architect said, look, you have to fire protect from below, fire protect from above, you have to sound insulate from below, sound insulate from above. People that don't have that experience won't know that. That could be very, very expensive.
Yes.
So it's bringing the right people on board. Get your architect, somebody you trust, on board to lead it.
Early,
to go and look at it with you. Don't assume things, you know. Never assume things. And overestimate on your costs. Overestimate on your build costs. Underestimate on your GDV. Underestimate on your finishing value. And listen to your team. That's what I'd say. You can do it. It can be done. And if you've got somebody beside you or somebody that's maybe got a wee bit of experience, bring them along. There's no harm in getting 50% of some and getting 100% of some and having somebody on board that can make sure you get a good 50% of that.
Yeah. You know? Okay. One more question, which was about construction costs. You just brought that up there.
Yeah.
Where is your barometer on construction costs right now from where they were a year ago, where they were obviously post-COVID, where we all know that was. What's your feeling? Because you're right at the sharp end there right now.
At cost. Mm-hmm. At cost, if I'm building houses at cost, I'm looking anywhere between 1,100 and 1,400 a square metre.
Yeah.
At cost. If I'm bringing a contractor in, that could be 2,000 a square metre.
Yeah.
So that's where the
dial is right now.
That's where the dial is right now. So if you're trying to do it yourself, if you've got the experience, do it yourself. You know, if you can sweat the equity, if you can bring the contractors in, and if you bring a main contractor in, you've got a main contractor's overhead and profit you've got to think about. And that can be quite substantial.
Prelims and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
And bearing in mind, we're talking here about resi, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what about looking forward? Are you pricing in significant increases in costs, costs even coming down, costs levelling out?
Stabilising. They're stabilising now. They're starting to stabilise. They're not as mad as they were. Costs were phenomenally, phenomenally high.
That was everybody pricing in risk.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to. It's they're starting to stabilise just now. But you have, you know, it means your developments now, it's costing you more. It's costing you more, and you have to have do your due diligence at the start. That's very, very important. But in terms of cost, they're starting to stabilise.
Yeah, so it's a little bit easier to predict, and therefore
I think it is. I think it is, and this one that we're looking at up north, we're looking at doing a lot of it ourselves.
Yeah,
you know, and the business partner, my two business partners, one's a utilities expert, one's a ground civils contractor. So they're the two most important people you need on a development. Because your project, when you're doing house building, your project is won and lost in the ground.
Yeah.
Your money's won and lost in the ground. You know, and if building a house is building a house, above the ground is going to be the same.
I speculatively built a house once and 100% can concur.
Yeah, yeah.
The money lost was in the ground.
In the ground. It's in the ground. So, you know, if you can get a groundworks contractor, civils contractor, you can trust, grab them with both hands, you know, honestly, because these guys can make your job work.
Yeah.
100%.
Gary, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, can they reach you on LinkedIn?
Yeah, they can get me on LinkedIn, get me on Facebook. Email address is gary.wilson6060@outlook.com.
Okay, did you do that 3 years ago?
I did that 3 years ago. My daughter did that for me.
Well, also, we will put a link in for the rum.
Fantastic. That'd be great.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much,
Jerry.
Gary.
I appreciate that. Cheers.
Brilliant.